Before we get started, we have a great announcement of the winners of the Facebook Like and Share contest. The winners will receive a copy of Art of the Christian Ninja by our very own Al Desjardins. The two winners are April Dawn McLeod and Crystal Teedy. Thank you for liking and sharing Carnivore Theology. And we'll contact you shortly to get your details to send those books to you.
Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat, to grow into a wise, skilled, world-changing follower of Jesus Christ, with theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Desjardins, and your host, Steve Bastian.
This is part one of Carnivore Theology's two-part series on the state of abortion, with special guest Mike Shouten of WeNeedALaw.ca.
So we're out here at Stanley Park in the heart of Vancouver. We're hanging out with our new friend, Mike Shouten. Mike, he is the director of We Need a Law. He has a lifelong passion about politics and the sanctity of human life. He's been published in the National Post, Vancouver Sun, the Calgary Herald, and has been interviewed on numerous radio talk shows across our nation.
That's good. I'm just a giant slide straight into Carnivore Theology. Do you feel it? Can you feel the gravimetric pull towards Carnivore Theology that your life has just led to this moment?
It's all been leading up to this, guys.
Okay, it's good. I'm so glad.
Yeah, so we decided to turn on our recording machine and capture this conversation. But before we get into heavy subjects, we need our guests to go through
The Meat Grinder.
Welcome to The Meat Grinder. This is a biblical knowledge and personal integrity examination to see if you're worthy to speak in authority to the Carnivore Theology audience. You'll be asked a series of questions of your personal beliefs, things that Carnivore Theology finds important, and a dissection of your theology. The rules are: answer honestly and quickly. Indecisiveness will be seen as weakness, and you will be judged.
I'm sure glad I went to Toastmasters.
Standing in the middle of a beautiful park in Vancouver, and the deer are playing in the field, the beautiful, wonderful day. You know what we need to do now that we've met this new friend? Let's immediately test him on things that he's never heard about. Okay, go. Quack.
Okay, are you ready? Question number one.
This is how we meet our new friends.
Luther, Calvin, or L. Ron Hubbard?
Calvin.
Okay. Your preference, beard or no beard?
As you can see, it seems to be beard these days.
Yeah, I think that's why we actually asked you to join our walk.
That's right.
Communion, wine or Welch's grape juice?
Wine.
Number four, will there be bacon in heaven?
Absolutely.
Ooh. He's doing really well. Number five, pick one book other than the Bible, if you could pick one.
Politics According to the Bible by Wayne Grudem.
I haven't read that one. Okay, very important Canadian question. Flames, Oilers, Jets, Senators, Canucks, Leafs, or Canadians?
Canucks all the way.
Oh, that's going to be a negative.
Never jumping off the bandwagon.
This all goes through the computer, so it gets weighed completely impartially. We want you to know that.
Your favorite flavor of ice cream?
It'd have to be Chocoholic.
Okay, number nine, Batman or Iron Man?
Iron Man.
And lastly, you go on a cruise vacation with your family, and there's a shipwreck. Your family survives, but is trapped castaway style on a deserted island. If we asked your wife, who knows your survival skills, how long would she say you and your family would survive?
We added a hint of honesty to the question. You'll notice it's not your answer, it's your wife's answer.
Oh, wow. She'd probably say 4 weeks.
Good for hey, that's pretty good.
That's really good.
That's about how long a human can survive without food. So.
Oh, phew.
Well, Al, run it through the computer.
Should we tabulate it? Okay, run it through the computer.
Okay.
you go. He just made it. I think the bacon question pushed him over.
Oh, good.
Vancouver seemed to have dipped him, but man, oh man, if he can last 4 weeks in the wild with his family, then he can definitely survive an entire episode of Carnivore Theology.
We shall see.
It's totally the beard. It's totally the beard. I did some research on you guys, and I saw you all had beards. So I'm like, I'm going to grow a beard too because I want to be just like them.
You have to. And that's actually, that's the subtitle of most of our episodes. Be just like us.
It adds to the virility of the show.
Yeah, and your opinion's weighted on how long your beard is.
Oh, you must be for sure the smartest guy here.
That's why he talks the least.
Yes, that's why I talk the least. Okay, carry a big stick, but speak quietly.
It's better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
That's right.
Yeah, that's why I don't speak much. Yeah.
We had to put him through the meat grinder because that's tradition, but we're really getting into a topic that is pretty heavy. So we, as much fun as we like to have with our guests, we need to turn to a really important and heavy topic. And I'm really glad we bumped into Mike on this conversation. So we do have a few questions for you. We just started talking about We Need a Law, and I want to find out more about it. And I felt like our listeners would want to hear more about it as well. Mm-hmm. So we kind of came up with some questions, and would it be okay if we just kind of shot some questions at you and see what it's all about?
Any questions valid.
Mike, I would love to find a little bit about your backstory, about yourself, and especially why you're passionate about the sanctity of human life and politics, because you're involved in an organization that covers both of those things.
It's an interesting history because I wasn't involved in politics or in the pro-life movement for most of my life. In fact, I spent the first 20 years of my working life in the horticulture industry. Working in various operations, whether it was field crops, like I'm talking daffodils and tulips and flowers and so on, to working the last 12 years in a greenhouse, pumping out weekly horticulture crops. So very interesting that God has led me to this in his providence. And a bit of the tidbits along the way. In the early 2000s, we moved, our family moved because of my work. And I quickly got involved with a local ARPA chapter. So ARPA stands for the Association for Reform Political Action. They have chapters across the country. And my wife said, oh, why don't you head out to one of those meetings? Maybe you'll meet some new people. We're in a new area, etc. So I went there. And lo and behold, first meeting, they needed a new person on the board. And there was only about 10 people in the room. So I got elected onto the board. It's just a
new guy. The board.
I came home and I said to my wife, you were very successful in getting me involved. So that was sort of my first dabbling into politics. And we got involved with the local city council. There was, at the time, they were trying to put up a casino in the city. So we were challenging that and meeting with city officials, etc. And then it moved up to getting involved with a local candidates race in regard. This was right around the time when the Alliance Party was merging with the Progressive Conservative Party in Canada, became the Conservative Party. So there was a whole raft of new nomination races. We got involved with one of them. Actually got a pro-life candidate chosen and then elected to Parliament. And then over the next few years, actually became quite disillusioned with the whole political process because I saw how that candidate, as well as many other good candidates, became what I call Ottawized. When they went to Ottawa, they quickly learned how to live in that bubble. They learned how to obey the people up in on high, so to speak. And became disillusioned because nothing was happening. We got involved because of the social and moral issues like abortion, euthanasia. At the time, same-sex marriage was a raging debate. So these are some of the things that were on our hearts and why we wanted to get involved. And once our people got in, elected, they seemed to just ignore us and they could care less. So in 2011, I challenged the candidate that we had worked to get nominated and elected, and I ran against him under the banner of, I'm not sure if you've heard of it or your listeners have heard of it, the Christian Heritage Party. This is a party that I hadn't heard of before, and someone introduced me to it, and I said, I looked at their policies and thought, it quite aligned with where I'm at. Let's give it a try. So we ran a pretty successful campaign, not in other regards to votes, but we had the signs, we had door knockers, we had volunteers out. It was a really good experience. And that's where God showed me that this is something that you have gifts for and you can do. So I'm a firm believer that if God is opening doors for you and showing you that through other people who are encouraging you, then you need to pursue them. You can't just ignore them. You can't bury your talent, right? So, after the campaign, I wasn't sure what to do. I wasn't completely content in the Christian Heritage Party because they have some other policies that I didn't really align with, and they actually were a stumbling block to pushing forward on the pro-life mm-hmm. position. But I was content to continue with what we had started. About 4 months after the campaign, I was approached by the executive director of ARPA Canada. So this is the national organization that all these little local groups I talked about earlier kind of operate underneath. And he said to me, he said, you know, we're very busy with many different files, but by far the pro-life file is the busiest. It's the biggest file. And we're looking for somebody who can champion a public awareness campaign to bring more attention to this issue. So he had a bit of an idea, excuse me, a concept. And at the time, I sort of balked at it. I was like, really? Like, this? I don't know if this is for me. I had a wife right. and six kids at home. Many, you know, financial responsibilities. And I said to him right there, I'm like, how can you possibly work in the pro-life movement? Like, who's going to pay you? You know, I was used to you pick a bunch of flowers, you sell it, you make a little bit of money. You sell some potted plants, you make some money, and that's how you make your living, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, no. He said, look, there's some people who are willing to fund this for a year. They're willing to fund somebody for a year to see if this can get off the ground. So after a few months, of probably 6 to 8 weeks of prayer and consulting with friends and family and so on, my wife and I decided to walk through that door. And we left the security of working in the for-profit world to go out and try to make this a go. So initially, we had to start from scratch. What is this going to be called? What's our mission? What are our goals, etc.? And when you go to the website now, what you see is four and a half years after that, after we've launched, and I think we've come a long way. So that's a bit of how I got involved and, you know, right up to where I am today.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. That's excellent information.
Well, let's move this into some of the deeper questions involved in what you're advocating for. So I'm going to set the stage just a little bit for this one. Now, on the program here, this Christian program, we hold the Judeo-Christian ethic and worldview with regards to the right to life and everything. We believe that God has created humanity in his image, and because of that, there is an inalienable right to life, or in fact, to deprive a human being of life is an assault on God. And so we and most of our listeners are kind of fixated with understanding that this is an important issue. But there is also a larger cultural connection within our society. When we talk about, for example, the Canadian Charter, we see that our societies recognize that every person has the right to life, liberty, security of person, and that can only be deprived with some sort of due process and fundamental justice. So when we get into the debates that have to do with abortion, we're really getting into nitty-gritties about what is life, and all these other things, because once we can come to a consensus on those issues, then there doesn't seem an issue. So how does the law in a society that believes in the right to life address abortion, and how is it working today?
It addresses it by ignoring it, if you will. We have a section 223 of our criminal code, which states that a child does not become a human being under the meaning of this act until it has fully exited from its mother's body. And that's the legal definition we have of when you become a human being. Now, keep in mind that prior to 1988, when Canada's abortion laws were struck down in the Morgenthaler decision, prior to then, we still had Section 223. So we had Section 223, which is essentially speaking about personhood, and we also had regulations on abortion. So up to 1969, abortion was completely illegal. Between 69 and 88, it was what we call regulated through some of the laws that Trudeau the Elder brought in. And then since 1988, absolutely nothing. So yeah, we live in a country that values life and protects the right to life. But there's a tension between what is perceived as a pre-born human rights and a woman's rights. And so that's the scenario we're in right now. And we could talk for hours about how we got to that position, and how Canadians became to accept the fact that a women's rights, so-called right, supersedes every right of a preborn child right up until the moment of birth.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because, the absence of a law, I think, surprises a lot of Canadians. We're so familiar with the American debates that we see on television, and there rarely is any public debate in Canada per se. Every time it's brought up as a boogeyman in a political debate, it's poo-pooed by every candidate and nobody moves forward with it. But we actually live, since 88, in a total vacuum of laws even regulating what goes on with abortion, as far as I'm aware. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's a legal void unlike any other country in the entire world. Even when we look to countries like China, they have some regulations surrounding abortion, dealing specifically then with the practice of sex selective abortions or abortions yeah. just because the preborn child is a specific sex. So yeah, we're unlike any other country. We're in a very extreme position, but I think one of the, especially as people who live our lives upon a Judeo-Christian ethic, we do well to question what we and other pro-lifers, people who also believe in the sanctity of life, what we have done to contribute to this legal void. And I think that's something that's often overlooked by not just Canadians, but by pro-lifers. Pro-lifers have for decades now, especially in the political arm of the pro-life movement, they have been advocating for what we call an all-or-nothing position. So right. We want all of life from conception onwards protected and nothing short of that. So if any MP comes forward and introduces a law that would say ban abortion and protect preborn children after 14 weeks gestation, this is not an extreme request. This is something that most European countries, some of which are like far more liberal or secular than Canada, they all have these in place, these kind of laws. So if an MP would come forward and propose such a law, which has been done in the past, the pro-life movement, the political arm, would come out and instead of supporting that arm, that proverbial arm that MP is walking out on, the pro-life movement would help to cut the arm off because that bill wasn't good enough, didn't satisfy what they wanted. So there's this a failure to understand that we're living in a pluralistic society. And even as Christians, we have a calling to advocate for laws and for public policy that moves us closer to what would be the ideal.
Yeah, having a realistic view. It totally reminds me historically of William Wilberforce and his campaign to end slavery in the British Empire. They made incremental changes throughout, I think it was about a 40-year time span before they ever saw the abolition of slavery. And he was a realist and knew that it wasn't going to happen the day he first entered a bill in Parliament. And I think we need to be a little bit more realistic in our thinking politically.
Yeah. And we've been at this now for 4.5 years. And the first 2.5 was spent trying to convince other pro-lifers that this wasn't a compromising position, that we weren't, sacrificing some babies to save others and all these other nonsensical claims that would come from fellow pro-lifers who you want to be on the same page as, right? So it's taken some time to get people to understand what is prudential politics and how do we as pro-lifers work in the political arm in an effective way, but also in a way that embraces the opportunities to save some instead of saying, we're not saving any unless we can save all.
Right. Good point.
What are the numbers of abortions in Canada? Do we have those statistics?
Yeah, this gets into very interesting territory because we claim that there's approximately 100,000 abortions every year in Canada. So this,
wow,
this
is... That's a boggling, just give me a second on that number. That's a mind-boggling number.
A medium-sized city.
That's a huge amount of people.
Oh, it's incredible. And to put it in a bit of different perspective for your listeners as well, that's the equivalent to like 5,000 classrooms full of students every single year that are aborted.
Yeah.
Right? You could have three more programs on this topic just talking about the demographic impact that abortion has had on Canada.
We hear that in the States, just to interject a little bit. The abortion destruction, or whatever you want to call it, tends to enter into low-income people, ethnically minority people. Is there a similar, do we know, are there similar statistics that in Canada? Does it disproportionately affect any particular group?
Well, so this ties into the earlier question about numbers and stats, right? So this is the problem in Canada. Statistics are incredibly hard to discern. Like you can't get statistics. We have some, they're incomplete. But we don't, even from those statistics, we don't know exactly when the abortions are occurring. We don't know reasons given for the abortion. We don't know incomes of the women getting abortions. In fact, two of our provinces, Ontario and British Columbia, both have laws specifically pertaining to abortion-related information, and it places abortion-related information outside of the Freedom of Information and Freedom and Access to Information Acts. So if you send an FOI to your British Columbia government representative, they could not give you any information. It's against the law for them to do so. So it's we're seeing this move, and this is again why it's so important that we begin taking steps to push back against the status quo, because as year after year after year goes on with this legal void, as was discussed earlier, it's getting harder and harder and harder to make progress, and they're gaining more and more ground. And one of those areas is censorship. They know, like abortion advocates and people who advocate for the pro-choice position, they know that their argument does not stand up. It doesn't. You just simply do not have a good apologetic for it. So what is their response? Well, let's silence pro-lifers. And we're seeing that more and more and more across our country.
Mm. I'm wondering if I could move this in a kind of a futurist kind of look at things. There's lots of stuff in the news. There's some medical journals now speaking about that people will be able to select their children, you know, have a whole bunch of embryos in a lab and then select based on DNAs about hair color, eye color, intelligence, height. And then also to throw into the mix of that, the Zika virus, I believe I'm saying that right, Zika, it's been confirmed in Canada. There's lots of news about how it causes birth defects. What do you see these as upcoming challenges for We Need a Law and for pro-life movements?
Specific to the Zika virus, we don't see that as a challenge. I think that most people see through abortion advocates. They're sort of taking over that tragedy that's occurring, this crisis that's happening, especially in South America, and trying to use it to their advantage, which is just ridiculous. So I think more of the challenges are going to be just working with elected lawmakers to convince them that they can regulate and, God willing, you know, make abortion illegal again at some point. They can do this without fearing political paralysis. We live in this situation where politicians are so scared of this topic that as soon as it comes up, they're, you know, offer the no comment, or we're, you know, what was Harper's famous line? You know, our government is never going to introduce laws that restrict abortion, etc. But as we put forward our message and our talking points, which show Canada to be in such an extreme position, and also, like I said earlier, build support from the middle, more and more the politicians are willing to work along with us. And that's another change from how things used to be, when pro-lifers would show up in an MP's office and say, we want a law that bans abortion, preferably yesterday. They're like, well, we can't do that. We just can't do that. But if we walk in and say, look, we realize that you won't be able to ban abortion yesterday, but there certainly are some steps we can take to get in line with countries around the world and then continue working, right? And it's no different than what advocacy groups on the left do, and we accept what they do all the time, right? If we have an environmental group that wants to protect a certain area, a certain watershed, and they achieve that, we don't expect them to pack their bags and go home. They're going to then ask for the next piece of watershed to be protected, right?
Right.
Another analogy is Mothers Against Drinking and Driving, right? They want to outlaw drinking and driving. But when the opportunity comes up whereby they can work with legislators to lower the blood alcohol level by even 0.1%, they'll do it. Right? Exactly.
It's a matter of being wise in our politic, and right. we've noticed for a long time that in general, the left has been very good at making lasting incremental changes, and the right has demanded radical changes, collapsed, failed, and been out, and then allowed the left to move forward again. We've seen this in just about every area of the political field, and I think if we don't wake up to that, we're going to be in a lot of trouble generally. We deeply appreciate the opportunity we had to hear from you, and we've got to wrap up, unfortunately, even though this conversation could go on and on. You've said it a few times, but could you give our listeners the best mm-hmm. place to go to find information, your website, any other materials that you would point them to?
Yeah, so our website, weneedalaw.ca, is the first place, but especially for listeners who are on social media, we're very active on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, so simply search for We Need a Law on those platforms, and you'll be able to follow us. But it's important that people get plugged in, so when you go to the We Need a Law site, then just plug in your email address to receive our updates, and they're really not onerous. We ask people to do very simple things, but the motto is that many people doing a small thing makes a big difference, right? And that's what we're about, making a difference. We want to be able to make a difference, and it can't be just one or two people. It has to be thousands and thousands and thousands, and that has to grow.
To find out more about carnivore theology, or if you've got any topics or questions you'd like us to cover on upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting our website, www.carnivoretheology.com. You can also leave a message on our SpeakPipe page. That's at www.speakpipe.com/carnivoretheology. If you like what we're doing, please share with your church and friends. Like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.